Over the apology of the Honourable Lund, we have the written apology from him here. Honourable Deputy Minister and the team, we appreciate the fact that we have received the presentation well in advance. We always value that greatly because it gives us some time to prepare before the meeting. We also appreciate that there are, in my reading, three elements. The first is to look at the APP 2017-18 at Durko, but then you also have the African Renaissance Fund in there, and then also to look at the budget for both of those. The procedure, honourable members, that we follow is that we receive it in the committee. We do not present it in the NCOP. It is only presented in the NA, but we need to receive it in this meeting. With that done, we have a relative leeway in terms of time. We are starting at 10 past with the presentation. So if you could take maximum an hour with the presentation. If you take longer, it's fine. Now, if you take less time, that would be super. Not longer, if you take less time, because then we would want to give an opportunity for the members to engage with that as well. But just before you start, let me say, Deputy Minister, that we recently, at very short notice, agreed as a joint select committee to do oversight in Malaysia and Singapore. And we were proud and extremely appreciative of the cooperation we got from your Durko colleagues and our colleagues in both countries. And in a short period of time, they were able to put together a very helpful program for us in both Malaysia and in Singapore. In Malaysia, we noticed that the person who was responsible for the program was in an acting capacity, but that did not compromise the quality of the preparations that were done for us, and we want to register our appreciation. Can we hand over to you? The procedure that we normally have, Deputy Minister, is that you can say anything political that you want to say, because we don't allow the staff to do the open political things. Everything is political. But then we give to the staff to do the actual factual presentation of what is before us. So thank you very much.
Chairperson, thank you, and honourable members, we appreciate this opportunity. It's been a while since we've appeared before you. Let me acknowledge that right up front. I'm grateful to you for your comments about Malaysia and Singapore, because from time to time we do get brickbats thrown at us about South Africans receiving adverse treatment from our missions and embassies. And so we always believe that it's not bad at every single embassy, so it's nice that we balance, particularly by elected representatives who go there in their official capacity. We appreciate the work that you're doing, and I'm grateful to my officials for having sent you the presentation in good time. It's something that I demand of them, as I'm sure you do as well. I've asked them to handle the bulk of the presentation. I'll be here to deal with questions and comments, as I'm sure they will be. This is not an excuse or a means of avoiding what I'm required to do, but half my mind is on tomorrow's budget debate. And so, as MPs, you'll understand what that entails. I'm into my sixth draft of my speech right now, and there's two aspects that I said to my staff that I want included. So, as you can well understand, one's mind is sort of jumping from one thing to the next. I think I can just say to you, I can share this with you, that my colleagues, deputy ministers and ministers, have expressed concern. This is in relation to the African Renaissance Fund, and have requested that we have a relook at how the process that is followed. They've identified, and this has been brought to their attention by their counterparts, particularly from Africa, who have said, look, the process is terribly bureaucratic. There are forms to be filled in. They're expected to come to Durco cap in hand or with a begging bowl, as it were. And so, which is very undignified. And the process takes very long. This comes from our own ministers and deputy ministers. So they've said to them, look, please, look at a way of being proactive. And I've shared this with them. Said to them, look, both the Secretariat and the Advisory Committee need to be aware of what our ministers have said to me. The process needs to be speeded up, firstly. Secondly, the Advisory Committee and the Secretariat have to be proactive. So when a disaster, whether it's a drought, earthquake, occurs, you be proactive. You have an embassy either in that country or in a neighboring country. Go to them and say, we have this fund. Can we assist you? And then sit down with them, fill in the necessary forms, and hopefully in that way process will be speeded up. Because as things stand, we sit back as the Advisory Committee and the Secretariat and say, well, we have the money. If you want us to help you, come. And they do, obviously. And it takes 3, sometimes 5 years. Now, if a drought hits you this year or an earthquake, and I'm only giving you financial aid in 5 years' time, well, it becomes pointless. So that's something that we are trying to address with them, and just to make them mindful of the fact that, yes, they work in terms of an act of parliament, but that doesn't preclude them from, as I said, being proactive in the process of what they're doing. I just thought I'd share that with you, Chairperson and honorable members, so that you understand what's sort of in the pipeline. And I was in your position and in theirs once upon a time. And so I hated being caught unawares and being presented with something out of the blue without being made aware of it. Thank you. So I'll hand over to our CFO, and him and his capable staff will make the presentation. But they will begin with the annual performance plan and move on from there. Thank you.
Thank you, DM, for the opportunity, and thank you, Chairperson, for inviting us. Firstly, I just want to send our apologies for the DG. He had planned to be with us, but unfortunately, based on the development in headquarters, he had to delay his departure. So they requested that we then take the presentation on behalf. So thank you, Chair. We have a presentation here. We'll start with the annual performance plan for the department. In terms of the presentation will then cover the issue of the situation, the world that we operate in, which is divided in terms of the performance environment, also the operational environment. As South Africa, in terms of foreign policy outlook, is based on our commitment and to the values and ideas of Pan-Africanism, which will guide us in terms of solidarity with people of the South and the need to cooperate with all peace-loving people across the globe in pursuit of our shared prosperity and a just, equitable So in terms of the implementation, which we then focus on the high dynamic and often unpredictable environment, which is complex, that we find ourselves in terms of the geopolitical environment, which underpins the changes in terms of the global populism that we are witnessing, as well as anti-establishment politics and proctionalism that is on a high, as well as the was in different atmospheres. So that's what is characterized the environment that we operate. And the technotic changes in the global order reveal the uncertainty of the current global landscape. So then I understand that the concept of VUCA in terms of the volatility and ambiguity and the complexity that we find ourselves in the environment that we operate. So we, on the other hand, we then witness a sharp decline in the commodity prices, which we witness in terms of the oil in Nigeria, as well as the one Angola, in terms of what we are witnessing in terms of the commodity price, which also has an impact on the investment that we have to attract, which is basically extended, especially in the developing countries, is what we are witnessing. Then the operational environment that we operate as a country with the implementation, we discharge this based on the footprint that we have in more than 160 countries. So currently we have 124 missions in the reporting period. And the reason why we decreased from 126 missions is with the closing of our mission in Libya in terms of the situation there. And we just look at the closing of our mission in Uruguay, Montevideo, in terms of consolidation. But however, in the period that we're in, we also going to open two missions, which is the Odyssey, as well as the Central African Republic, which will then give us the number of 126 in terms of the representation of the footprint. Now, in terms of the implementation of our 2017-18 annual performance plan, we also view against our performance as well as the organizational environment, which we find the focus of our APP in the period under review would be, amongst others, strengthening our economic and political relations through structured bilateral mechanisms, utilize our chairpersonship of SADC, which will be hosted in August, to focus on programs which will then expedite the implementation of regional integration agenda, as well as the agenda 2063 in terms of boosting the continental prosperity with a reduced reliance on international cooperation partners. So which talks about one of the key implementation outcome is the self-reliance, which we need to then find a way on how to then fund the problems of Africa using the solutions, because most of the time when we receive the aid from other countries, especially in the north, which will then hamper the challenges in terms of the response time that we need to respond to crisis situation that we need to then attend. So the support in terms of peace and security efforts in the continent, which we continue to look in terms of development that were indicated, because it is our mission in Libya, not because of our choices, but because of the environment that we are here to continue to operate in that environment. And we continue with our efforts in terms of the role that the democratic process plays in South Sudan, in terms of the mediation process that we are delivering, as well as the situation in the DRC and we then continue to strengthen North-South relations, in particular the United Kingdom in terms of the Brexit, that the witnessing, as well as we continue to foster our relations with the EU in terms of what we have signed with the EU bloc, and we'll continue to strengthen the working relations with the United States of America, which is a specific focus on AGOA in terms of what we then benefit from that. And we'll then assume our chairpersonship in 2018 for BRICS, which will be after a 5-year period. So this will come on the back of the inaugural summit that we hosted after we were admitted in Durban in 2013. So we'll then be looking at that in the 2018. And we'll also look at the Sahakwa chairpersonship for the Indian Ocean Rim Association that will be taking place in October. So this is the priority areas that we'll be looking at. And also recognize the effects of climate change. And the honorable members will remember when we hosted the COP17, which is basically the platform that will then allow the countries to agree the Paris Agreement, which was the build-up, the work that we did as a country during COP17. And we then support the IPSA initiative, the platform which we coordinate our work, which we then support the countries of the South in terms of the developmental agenda. And we then recognize the challenge that we face in an unpredictable global environment, which we witness within the UN and the global government system. So not members, based on the MTF allocation that we want to present electronically, it is wish to say we find ourselves in a situation where we need to do more with less in terms of the reduction that we are facing, which is culminated by the poor performance of the economic indicators, which is basically the general approach that we need to look. So we want to present to say, based on the indicative baseline that we received, which is a reduction, which it requires to do more with less. We want to indicate in 2017-18, our indicative baseline is 5.9 billion. And within that, based on the environment that we operate, which is volatile, which is impacted by the foreign exchange rate, so in the baseline, we then receive an additional funding of 828 million, which is basically to bring the exchange rate to the current prevailing rate. So these are the exchange rates that we use to compute our budget in terms of the dollar rand exchange rate, euro rand exchange rate. So this was to the indicators was that in 2017-18 the economy would have grown in line with vision 2030 NDP, but unfortunately the growth is less than what we had planned. So the rent is the level that the adjustment was required. But in the same line, the department then incurred a reduction in terms of the allocation, which then affected the African Renaissance Fund in terms of recapitalization and also for the operations, which talks about goods and services, 4 million, as well as a minor adjustment on the capital expenditure. So in total, honorable members, the allocation that we are proposing in terms of how we then allocate it to the market is
It means it is a state-to-state agreement that we have, for example, example, South Africa with Namibia, it is the BNC, a bilateral national commission, and that structured mechanism would identify at what level and how often that engagement between the two countries would happen. We've also targeted 40 high-level visits. This is to make sure that our principals would engage with their counterparts in the various countries to make sure that we are driving and advancing our national priorities, the nine-point plan, as well as the issues that's been raised in SONA this year, then also the issues and the interests of the continent, as well as of the local staff. So that is the political indicator that we have in Program 2. Then we have an economic indicator in Program 2. Because of our extensive footprint, as the CFO indicated, it means that our missions abroad is the coalface. They're the ones that would be able to engage with the role players in the various countries to ensure that we can contribute towards our economic growth targets at home. So what we have identified and targeted once again is that our missions will identify various platforms to promote our products abroad in order to create an appetite for possible export of our products. So that's why we're targeting our trade and investment seminars to explain what the business environment is in South Africa, what are the business requirements to conduct business with South Africa. Engagement with the Chambers of Commerce, this is identifying particularly if there are trade barriers in place, that they will engage with the various Chambers of Commerce around that. We really committed to our national priorities, particularly if we look at skills development, so we would target our various government ministries, we're looking at science cooperation, scholarships that we want to get commitments for our country, for our children at home. Then also identify particular potential investors, meeting with them, explaining to them, enticing them, setting them up, linking them up with business in South Africa, particularly your SMME as well, so that we can increase our investments in South Africa. And then, of course, very important, our tourism events. We need to tell the world what South Africa has to offer, and of course we can say we're not taking credit alone for it, but we have just noticed when the tourism figures for 2016 were issued that we've seen a 13% increase of international tourist arrival, and of course that goes with an increase in tourist spend. So it is very important that our missions continue to do that work to sell South Africa abroad, and that's what we've targeted. In terms of our regional integration particularly, and as we've indicated, our focus area is that we're taking over the chairship of SADC this year, and then of course promoting and driving our regional industrialization strategic plan in the region. Then also committing ourselves to participate in election observer missions. And for example, we have the Lesotho elections now on the 3rd of June. The SADC election observer mission is already being dispatched to ensure that the elections would be conducted in a free and fair environment. That's our program too. Then in terms of then the money that we would require now, in terms of program two, this is of course where we are supporting our foreign presence. That's why the bulk of our money sits in program two. And then what we're looking at spending or project to spend for 2017-18 is $3.5 billion that we set aside to support the achievement of our targets in program two. In terms of program three, this is our international cooperation, and there are four pillars there. First is global governance, then it's our work that we do on the continent, particularly around the AU, then we're looking at South-South and North-South. Now, South Africa is committed to multilateralism and a rules-based international order. And the NDP is very clear. It says South Africa needs to remain an influential global player. Now, in order to do that, it means that we have to be around the table to negotiate particular resolutions, to propose resolutions, to ensure that the decisions that are made by these world bodies would actually then also reflect our national interests as well as our objective of our foreign policy. In this regard, we've targeted 20 multilateral meetings and processes, and these are just the high-level ones. It does not mean these are the only ones, because the department plan, the requirements from National Treasury and the DPME is clear. What you put in your public document should really just be the strategic ones, not all of them, but the strategic ones. So, for example, we know that UNGA is very important for our participation, that our president every year would make sure that we get a speaking platform at UNGA to stress our commitment to an international rules-based order, the reform of our global governance systems. We're looking at the human rights, the United Nations Human Rights Council, and that's it at least three times a year. But it doesn't mean that we're not working with regard to our sub-technical committees as well, because our mission in Geneva, for example, would then take care of that work as well. Then also another target that we set ourselves in terms of international cooperation is that we would want to work towards having South Africans in certain positions in influential multilateral bodies. Now, we need to understand there's a different process that needs to be followed. The one is candidatures. Candidatures means that the position becomes available. We would put a South African forward, but we need to lobby because they get voted. Secondly, is a normal process where the UN would advertise the post. A South African would apply for the post, but that is that the South African would need to compete in terms of their skills, what they have, and compete against other countries as well. So we just need to understand that there's a particular difference. When we're looking at this, this is where we want to talk about candidates particularly. Then the second aspect of our global governance is our continental cooperation particularly, and here's the work that we're doing with regards to the AU. And as we've indicated a little bit earlier, African agenda is still central to our foreign policy. And yes, the AU is our continental body. Yes, there's a strive that we want to make sure that the AU becomes self-sufficient so that it can make decisions in an independent way as well. So what we're looking at a high level, once again, understanding that we have a mission in Addis that will work with all the sub-technical committees that we have, is that we would ensure that when we go to the AU summits twice a year that is being set, that we take the South African position forward. We're looking at the work that we currently do around the AU PSC. We know that last year we've been elected for the second consecutive term to serve as a member on the African Union Peace and Security Council. We are still honoring our commitments in terms of our host country agreement in terms of PAS. The African Court on Human and People's Rights, yes, we understand that we do have delays, that we don't have sufficient support on the continent with regard to the Maloba Protocol, but yes, we continue to do work on the African Court on Human Rights. And then, of course, our commitment in terms of NEPAD, and particularly the work that the President is doing with regard to the Presidential Infrastructure Project. Then in terms of South, South and North, South, our continued engagement, and for this, over the NCF, we looked at five strategies. We have country strategies, particularly for engagements of organizations of the South. For this year, as we indicated in the situational analysis, is that we will be taking chairship of IORA in October, and we'll be chairing for a year. And we need to just note that at the same time, we're chairing SADC, we're chairing IORA, we're going to chair, we're taking the chairship over of BRICS in 2018. So we're finding ourselves in a very particular situation where we can drive the same agenda across various platforms. So the one strategy that we're looking at that we've targeted for this year, particularly around IORA, the one for SADC we've already done, and then of course the BRICS one will be ready when we take over in 2018. Then we're looking at 12 identified meetings and processes and organizations of the South. Here we are particularly talking about NAM, we're talking about IORA, we will talk about IPSA, we will talk about the BRICS, and those are the 12 that we're looking at in terms of the four BRICS structures as well. Now, what we have done as well is that on the outcome 11, there was a requirement, there's a new indicator that they put in terms of how do we use the national BRICS structures. For example, the IMC that we have on BRICS, the regional steering committee that we have on BRICS, those are the national BRICS structures. So when there's a BRICS summit, there are particular outcomes. What are the domestic instruments that's been utilized? So we are driving those as well from our department. Then in terms of the targets that we have for the North, it is one meeting with formations of the North. Now, we do understand at the moment that the EU has their own political issues that they're dealing with. Of course, they're negotiating the Brexit, which is going to happen over 2 years. Then, of course, the insecure terrorism attack. So for this year, we have only targeted one of those meetings with the EU, and I think it is the MPD, the Ministerial Political Dialogue, that we have with the EU currently. Then the money that's been planned and budgeted for the work that we're doing in global governance is $565 million. When we then go to Program 4, now Program 2 and 3 gives us our substance work, and then Program 4 tells us, assist us in terms of, number one, public diplomacy, making sure that we, in the domestic audience.
Allow me to just
make sure that we have the same document. The narrative part is okay, but in the previous program, the total that you gave us was also different. The total that I have here on slide 24 for program 3 is 485, but you said 465. Yeah, that one there also shows 485.
Yeah, but that is 1617.
Yeah.
We need to go to the next column, which is 1718.
Oh,
yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. No, we're just making that comparison that we see that what we've currently spent and what we're planning to spend, and then we give the MTSF.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I read wrong.
If I will then continue with public diplomacy. So what are the platforms that we've identified on an annual basis? Public diplomacy, we have a public diplomacy strategy where we identify in terms of what is it that we want to do, what platforms do we want to utilize, what are the messaging that we want to send, understanding that we have a volatile and changing global environment. So yes, we're looking at our media briefings that we have, our public participation programs for our principals, to making sure our domestic audience are also informed about our foreign policy positions, the reasons why we make certain decisions, and the voting, explaining our voting as well. Then we have our media statements that's been issued. We're making sure that we have opinion pieces that's been that we issue, that we write, and we publish it in various publications. And then, of course, we have our own publications as well. Here we're thinking of the Ubuntu magazine that we publish. We're thinking particularly around our newsflash that we internally provide. So we have certain publications, and then, of course, they're also responsible for our annual report, meaning that they publish it. We will do the work, they will publish it for us, so the work and the money that goes into that. In terms of Program 4, we have two sections. We have 4.1 and we have a 4.2, which is the one is public diplomacy, the other one is our protocol services. Now, of course, in terms of the Vienna Convention and the Diplomatic Immunities and Privileges Act, which is our domestic legislation in terms of the Vienna Convention, as a country we are mandated to provide certain protocol services, and those would particularly around when we have an international conference at home, the protocol services, and of course the issues that we attend to there, facilitation of VIPs through our state protocol lounges, the protocol support that we provide to our principals for incoming and outgoing international services, the work that we provide in terms of protocol support for our three spheres of government, and then also that we're hosting such a huge diplomatic call, we're also supposed to provide them with certain diplomatic immunities and privileges for our resident foreign diplomats. This would, for example, be a diplomatic ID. This is, for example, liaising with the diplomatic protection section of the SATF, for example, assisting government when we're looking at visa applications for government officials and those that qualify in terms of that. And then, of course, we also, main focus of our service abroad particularly is the services that we provide to our South Africans that are traveling, and that's our consular services. So if somebody is abroad and they need some assistance, they can go to our mission and we provide our consular services. Legalization services, this is when we legalize documents, we provide a certain signature on it and validate when they want to use those documents abroad. That then brings us to Program 4, and then the money, once again, we will see that for 1617 it was 267, and for 1718 is 266 in terms of the budget that we have given. Chair, I will now go back and I'll give to the CFO to take us through the rest of the financials. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. The part that we want to present is the proposed budget that one department support the APP that we just presented. Program 5 is basically our obligation to the international organization where we pay our membership on behalf of South Africa as a member. So the current allocation for 2016 is 708 million, but you note that the proposed amount for 2017-18 is 670, which is a decrease, which we talk about as part of our budget pressure. education pay program and pay economic classification. We've got program one, which is our support program to the core function of the department. The adjusted budget for 2016-17 was 1.5 billion in program one of the administration. The proposed allocation for 17-18 is 1.5 billion, which is basically the program that supports the missions abroad. So these are the expenditure that we spend here locally in terms of the personnel. Now, program two, which is our main program, the current appropriation for 2016-17 was 3.7 billion. Now, the proposed allocation is a significant reduction to 3.5 billion. So this is where we'll talk to you when we come to the economic classification. Where are the reductions? And the international cooperation, which is program three, the appropriated amount after adjustment estimate process is 485 million. The proposed allocation, which is a slightly increase, which is 565 million. Which is basically the program that we support, the work that is done, the Pan-African Parliament, the one that we are hosting. So that is the part, the APRM, in terms of the host country agreement. We have a responsibility of providing the support services. Right? Program 4, as we already indicated, it's 267 million for the 2016-17 and 266 million for the proposed election for 2018, and the international relations are indicated in terms of international transfers, there's a reduction which is now 670 million. Now, the major part in terms of the reduction is on the economic classification. So, Treasury has then set an expenditure fee on compensation of employees. In terms of that ceiling, they had projected that there should be a reduction in the compensation of employees for the whole of government over the MTF period by 25 billion. So, in terms of that, we are then affected in terms of the allocation. Currently, we are spending at around about 3 billion in terms of our personnel, work bodies that we currently have. But the ceiling that has been set by Treasury is 2.9 billion, which means that we should do certain measures in the current financial year to reduce the spending around that, which is one of the issues that we talk to it. The goods and services, the proposed allocation is 2.7, which is a slight increase in terms of our obligation that we pay for rentals for accommodations abroad, which talks about the offices, which we call them chancellors, as well as the staff accommodation that we provide for the heads of mission, as well as the transfer staff in terms of the foreign service dispensation. So it's regulated that we need to then provide those benefits. So any failure to do that will then lead to litigation. And transfer payments, as I indicated, that is the amount 625 and 294 million in capital. This is one of the programs that we're trying to increase spending in terms of acquiring new properties in a strategy where we reduce our leasing portfolio. So currently we've got the one project that we're piloting, which is in New York, which we now piloting project in terms of the alternative funding model. So we've not done any PPP arrangement outside South Africa. So we are piloting that with National Treasury. They've given us approval to then pilot New York project as a PPP arrangement. So we feel that when we conclude that, we then enhance our strategy, which will then allow us to have a bigger footprint, at the same time reducing the lease commitment in terms of what we are paying in the area that we identified as priority area. Now, within the proposed budget, we want to highlight the budget pressures that we will be dealing with in the 2017-18. So one of the issues is to contain the expenditure within the predetermined expenditure. As I indicated, our spending currently is over $3 billion on compensation employees. Our ceiling is $2.9 billion. So already we are above that ceiling. The next one is to say, how do we then deal with the issues that fall within the unforeseen and unavoidable expenditure? So there are matters in the nature of work that we do, which we say is uncertain. One is the conference or summit that we then have to host. Not because we want to host, but because we want to pursue our agenda. Same as applies when we are hosting the SADC summit. So in that, there's additional expenditure that we need to incur, which was not part of our plan when we were preparing the MTE. The third one is the issue of the foreign exchange rate fluctuation. As we indicated, that one of the challenges or in terms of managing is the volatility of the rand against major currencies. So it will be good to see the rand increase, which means that we will then have more money to then direct to other areas. And when we have more money saved, we then have an arrangement in treasury to then give back that money to treasury for them to move to other projects. So the challenge is when the rand is not favorable in terms of depreciation trend. So which is then required through the adjustment to the process, where we then request for additional funding, which to meet. So now, in terms of the budget pressures that we indicated, honorable members, that the ceiling is 2.9 billion in 2017-18, which will come in down in 1920 to 2.8 billion. So that is the ceiling that has been set. But currently, our spending, in terms of the field post as well as the vacancies that we have, honorable members will recall that we just embarked in a process of organizational structure review to align our work in terms of the challenges that are now permeating in the global stage. In terms of one of the areas was to focus more on the economic diplomacy work. To say we need certain skills, we need to focus more on trade, and then we need the skills to do that. So in terms of the shortfall, we say if we had continued in the same structure, this is the shortfall that we are going to incur over the MTF period, which is just under $2 billion. So which is basically the contribution that Treasury has earmarked as $25 billion over the MTF period. So the contribution that is expected from DECO is around about under $2 billion over the MTF period, which is the allocation. So we're saying we have presented the picture to say these are the challenges. So what are we doing to mitigate those challenges as a department? We have started, honorable members, to say we understand that we don't have the budget means as we had the growth in the previous year, that the growth was supporting the spending. So there is low growth, which means that we need to then review our spending. So one of the mitigating factors that we are implementing was to review the structure of the locally recruited personnel, which are the structure that support the operation of missions in terms of the locally staff that we recruit. So we then look at the layoff of locally recruited personnel. So this is a process that is a long term, because it is not a retrenchment process, but is to say there are certain skills that we have acquired, and we then have the benefit in terms of technology that we are available now that you no longer necessarily have clerical work that you then require there before we use the technology. So those are the engagement that we are encouraging, because there are certain missions that already have staff that are over, in terms of service, more than 40 years of service. As we indicated in the past, there are countries that you don't necessarily have retirement age. So we need to then see how we mitigate that. So we have then embarked in that process, and it's a long-term process in terms of what we need to do over the MTSD. So we managed to lay off in the 1617 roundabout 98 local and rural personnel, which then translated to around about 35 million. So those are the initiatives that we want to then contribute in that. And also, we're looking at how do we then manage our structure at head office, as well as in terms of the filling of the position. So that is the exercise that we're currently looking at, and we have engagement with National Treasury in terms of how we then mitigate that. And the exchange rate, which is one of the areas that we always have challenges in terms of unauthorized expenditure, which is basically based on the commitment, which is mainly due to the commitment, the transfer payment that we pay to the AZ, which is in US dollar. So if now the bill that you need to pay is 16 million in US dollars, you can only pay what is equivalent in rand, because we will not have honored our commitment in full. So that is the part that we need to mitigate. So the unforeseen and unavoidable situation, we then have the chairpersonship of SADC, which in terms of the hosting the summit, because we need to then, the president need to invite the 14 heads of state and government to come during August to then pursue the agenda of integration in terms of what we have committed, which is basically the last adoption of this in Harare. So we need to pursue that process forward. And also one of the challenges is the in terms of the self-reliance. When we hosted the AU summit, the 25th ordinary summit of the Assembly of Heads of State in Centre, the declaration one was to have self-reliance. So means that we need to then fund our initiative in terms of peace. So AU has then introduced a peace fund, which was not part of the system. All that we've been paying was basically for supporting the operation in terms of the AU as part of our 15% contribution to the budget of the AU. So now we've got a peace fund, which we are currently engaging with National Treasury. And also there's an increase in assessment as well in terms of SADC membership, United Nations, as well as the African Union. So these are the issues that we are engaging with National Treasury in terms of how do we then manage to honor our commitment within the envelope that we have. So thank you, Chair. All that we can do is to move directly to the ARF, Chair. Thank you. in which we identified one of the stumbling blocks, and then we then initiated the process of coming up with a partnership fund for development, which seeks to address challenges in terms of how do we respond to the cost of what the fund has been intended to achieve. So those are the issues. So currently, we've got a legislation which then we need to work with. So in the meantime, as we identify these challenges, as to say, how do we then establish a permanent secretariat? In the past, we didn't have a permanent secretariat. We had a temporary staff vehicle seconded to the secretariat, which means that we then have a high team of our staff, which they will want to see enjoy the privileges that are associated with working for DICO, which will include opportunity of being posted abroad. So that it then lose the opportunity to have an institutional memory in terms of how you need to manage that. So this is how we then look at the fund in terms of the concurrence. So currently, we don't offer you, we don't have the capacity. So the fund provides grants, which basically, in terms of how we want to then pursue our foreign policy. So I'll then defer Chairperson to the head of the operations for ARF Secretary to take us on the performance.
Thank you, DM. Thank you, Chairperson. I'll be taking you through the program performance for the African Renaissance Fund and going through the strategic objectives. The first strategic objective is to promote democracy and good governance, and we do this by supporting the holding of democratic elections in identified countries on the continent. As Ms. Potter has said, we, the ARF funds, SADC election observer missions that go to observe elections inside the country. The next strategic objective, to contribute to human resource development. We develop and provide identified training programs through the Diplomatic Academy at DERCO that then provides training for diplomats from different African countries to increase their capacity and skills in diplomacy. And the third objective is to support social economic development and integration. We support the implementation of social economic development and integration projects on the continent to contribute to peace and to peace processes. What we do here is we mainly support we support the special envoys that participate in peace processes under this objective. To provide humanitarian assistance and disaster relief. We are those countries that are in need of humanitarian and disaster relief, as the DM had alluded at the beginning of his presentation. To support cooperation between South Africa and other countries, we implement bilateral and trilateral cooperation agreements, and we are having now a bigger focus on trilateral cooperation to increase our reach on the continent. And as the CFO had mentioned, that now that the ARF has a full-time secretariat, we then also actively manage the projects that we fund to ensure that the money is utilized for its intended purposes. And also what we do is that we make sure that as we close projects, we record the lessons learned so that in future, we can have institutional memory, as the CFO has said, to see what were the stumbling blocks and how we can better implement projects in the future. And going through the MTF allocation for the 17-18, the indicated baseline was 412 million. It was reduced by 390 and the appropriated funds are 22 million. So we've had we have significant reductions on the MTF allocation of the ARAs. And going on to the next slide, just to explain that the reason why we have the reductions on the ARAs is because the ARAs have an accumulated surplus of 1.9 billion. So it has enough funds in its surplus to be able to implement its mandate.
Thank you very much. We, if our memory serves me correctly, in the ABP that you presented last year, we made a specific request to say that can't we have ARF integrated into this as well, because for us being African, that is an important area of our oversight. So we thank you for accommodating us in that sense. Honourable members, we are at that stage where we are engaging with the report, but allow me this time to go first in terms of the engagement. That in a recent conversation that I had with one of our branches and also in conversation with some of the colleagues in the provincial legislature that I am serving in this parliament, on the question of public diplomacy, there is an urging out there that we should look at doing more in terms of how we engage that, but also with that, to request that when you do have that in the provinces, wherever it is possible, the Honorable Dikhale is not here, and I know she was one of those, being the Deputy Chairperson of the PGIR, indicated that, for example, if you have a public diplomacy event in Limpopo, she would want to be part of that. So for you to maybe just look at whether that is possible to do and what mechanism you would use to ensure that we are involved and are able to do oversight also at that level. That's the first point. The second is on the UNSC. Could you, I know that this presentation is not to update us on performance, but we are worried about the UN and particularly the Security Council thereof. In your APP, I noticed that you mentioned the UNSC in slide 20, but it is a matter of serious concern for us looking at what's happening in the global environment, particularly when we see here what is happening in Syria, and it's difficult for us to get behind the truth of that matter. I'm not saying they must give us a report on Syria, but I'm saying that on the UNSC, because South Africa has been campaigning for it to be more open to other countries or not have those superpowers that can veto in the UNSC, to just help us on that. The third question that I have is, yesterday the Department of Energy reported to us, and we have many questions to raise about the Great Inga project, but we have invested in the Great Inga. We know that it can contribute significantly towards radical economic transformation within the region with the development of sustainable energy from the Great Inga project. So we would want to know what you're reading about the stability. And we're not asking you to complain, we're asking you to help us that as we engage with the Department of Energy, what are those minefields that we need to look at in terms of the success of this project in the DRC? My third one is on Ubuntu Radio, but also all the other media that you are mentioning in one of the slides. I want to speak on behalf of all other members of the committee as well to say that if you have that material, let us rather say to you, you are overloading us. At the moment, we feel that we are not getting enough information from DERCO on those things that are happening. And particularly within the context that you're suffering from serious budgetary constraints, we would want to use our access to communities as well to help promote the work that DERCO, the wonderful work that DERCO is doing for us. Now, the reason why I'm mentioning Ubuntu Radio is because I'm one of those that are guilty of not listening to it. But can you give us an indication how effective it actually is? Then there's my last question, would be on the three spheres of government, and particularly what you're raising in slide 14, that we have picked up, that what's happening is that we, for example, wanted to go, let me be practical, we planned to go to Cuba earlier this year, and then we were informed that every sphere of government in South Africa wants to go to Cuba. We are overloading the Cubans. Don't go there. Then we decided to go to Singapore. And we get into Singapore, and the Singaporeans then invite us to a meeting that they have in Sandton that's being facilitated with the Johannesburg Chamber of Commerce. And I looked at it and I said, I'm from Gauteng. I need to consult with the provincial legislature. Do they know anything about this? When I engaged with the ambassadorial staff in Singapore, they were saying, and I'm saying this confidentially, not attacking the department that I like very much, they were saying that they've written several letters to DTI, but DTI has not responded. Now, that's part of our oversight. So if DTI is not responding, we need to know, but why are they not responding? Because staff serving under DERCO is serving the country there, and therefore the Department of Trade and Industries should at least have the decency to respond to that. That's the one element. But the second component of that is that we had an incident recently where some of our mayors would visit countries abroad, and we are saying that as this select committee, can we help ensure that there is a streamlining when such visits happen? Because the advantage that we have in the NCOP is that we come from the province, but we also have a closer relationship with SALGA and with local governments. We received, just as a further motivation, we received a report from the Attorney General, the Auditor General, yesterday. The point is that we then agreed that what we'll do as the NCOP is to, within the course of this year, convene a meeting with SALGA where we will raise some of these matters that we picked up at national level that impacts on local government. So I'm not sure if the thing of spheres of government visiting abroad is an element that you think there would be wisdom in engaging with us so that we raise that at that meeting that we have with local government structures as well. It's five questions. But let me not deprive my colleagues from raising questions as well. If you don't mind,
to take down the notes. We'll take the other members and see whether they have as many questions as I have. If they do, we'll take one member. If not, we may be able to take that. Can I get any indication from you members? Are there any questions that you would want to add? Okay, the Honourable Ntebe, we're going to take him first. He comes from the Platinum Province. I know they had they were independent before 1994. No. You. As mañana. Honourable Ntebe, are you ready?
Yes, sir.
Please proceed.
I think DM in your team, I think this is really a good presentation on the part of the department. But probably because we are also aware of the reality that we are operating from a fiscal cliff, and all other departments are then called upon to exercise fiscal prudence. We appreciate that. The difficulty in this part is that the CFO, you are telling us that you need now to implement measures that are going to ensure that such and feel fiscal prudence. But you're becoming academic. You're telling us, a department in South Africa and operating abroad, exercising the mandate of the country, and job creation is an apex priority. And you are telling us that no, laying off is not retrenchment. Now it's academic. If you talk about laying off, you talk about retrenchment, you talk about downscaling, it's the same thing. The sad part about this is that we are now this close to operating like your supranational corporation. That every time there's fiscal prudence measures implemented, we first go to staff. And that's my only concern, that we can do all other things, try to cut the... I can tell you now, I've been raising this thing forever. We went to Zambia, we went to all other areas. We told you, missions are broader in a state that are so dilapidated that we need to check. But I can see that now that we're operating under fiscal cliff, we cannot be able to do that. I understand, I appreciate that. But you cannot be going after workers as the first priority. Thank you, Chair.
Spoken like a trade unionist. Honorable Mahwebu is from the Eastern Cape, and we give you the floor, sir.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Thank you, Deputy Minister, and the DELCO team. My question really, I welcome the presentation on your how you plan to perform in this current financial year. But be that as it may, I want to talk about a few things really, just to get your comments and your responses to this. One is the issue of our foreign travels. You know, last year there was a very embarrassing incident. That was, I think it was in 2016. Hazel Francis, Ms. Hazel Francis Ngubeni, who was our High Commissioner in Singapore, who had embarrassed all of us that she was a convicted drug trafficker, spent 2 years in New York, convicted. And she went through the process, posted as our High Commissioner. Now, my question is, there is a process of vetting of officials, and then they're taken to your, what you call, diplomatic college or whatever, through the process. You know. How did you get through the process, and how do you plan to ensure that the recurrence of those? Because I understand that you rely, your vetting process should be twofold, internally and externally. You're assisted by security agencies. But internally as well, you look at you do your reference check of previous employers. She worked for SAA at the time. And they should have checked with SAA why she left SAA, because SAA already knew she was fired at SAA. precisely for the conviction in New York. But she went through the process you posted there. It's embarrassed all of us. Now this year, my question is, how do you plan to ensure that you post men and women of integrity in the diplomatic, you know, in this high commissioner position? And how do you close the gap and avoid the embarrassment and the recurrence of the same, that is what I call the Hazel Francis Ngobeni saga, that embarrassed all of us? That's my first question, Chair. The second one is the issue of public diplomacy. I see you've got platforms you want to utilize, you know, to ensure that you succeed. But, and please forgive me if I'm naive on this one. The platforms you're talking about, photography, 12 media briefings, public participation, as you know, the activities you want to do to make sure that you perform. But why are we not also using platforms like our schools, where our children are? That by way of an example, for instance, you know, you ensure that they understand the South African foreign policy, and the schools should be one of the platforms where I'll make an example, debates on these issues, or you make competitions or what have you, but schools as a platform so that our children will understand, you know, how we deal with issues of foreign policy, because these are our children who want to live when we pass on to the next life, and make sure that we live better citizens and a better country than the one we found, and leave it in capable hands. I want to believe. So that's my question. And my last question is the issue of the budget pressure, the budget pressures. I want to agree with my Honourable Leonard friend here, Mr. Ntebe, Honourable Ntebe, when he said that when you're addressing the budget pressures, you're talking about the layoffs, and the 98, you have saved so much, X amount. I'm not a trade unionist, not that I come from that background, but I agree with him that when you do that, we are living in a country where unemployment is so high, or perhaps if you can give us more details, when you lay them off, what process do you really do? What do you mean by that? Because I want to, now I'm thinking and I'm left to speculate, are you giving these people golden handshakes to send them home? Like you said, some have worked for 40 years, then so there's no prejudice on their side. And what do you really mean by these layoffs, you know, to deal with the budget pressures? Thank you, Chairperson.
Maybe let me test. Honourable Timonia, are you comfortable?
Can I jump through one question now that you're...
please,
do so. So, on the...
Let me say, while
the Honourable Timonia is on Mpumalanga.
No, let me...
He wanted to ask about the gas pipeline from Mpumalanga. No, you can't. Can we ask you, DM, and your team then to engage us?
I will address some of the questions, and then my team will fill in with the rest. I want to particularly deal, firstly, with your permission, with the issue you've raised, Chairperson, about the overloading of the cubicles and the streamlining of visits from South Africa to countries abroad. This is part of my particular responsibility. I've been tasked with undertaking visits to provinces, meeting with the provincial executive councils, meeting with executive mayors, and particularly large municipalities. And the purpose of these engagements is to impress upon the leadership there the importance of coordinating these visits. Now, thus far, we visited my home province, KwaZulu-Natal, we visited the Free State, and the Eastern Cape. Now, those visits have been very successful. I want to give you, this is not just an anecdote, something I dreamed of, but this actually happened, and it happened in Cuba. Our embassy in Cuba had been overloaded, as you put it, Chairperson. It was one visit after another after another. And of course, you need to understand, because it's Cuba, that the embassy is very small. Most embassies only have 5 people, including the ambassador. So this was at the end of a very tedious, tiresome period, where one delegation after another had been and left. And so there they were, very exhausted, this particular late afternoon, when the phone rang, and somebody picked up the phone, and the voice on the other side said, we are here. So this embassy official said, forgive me, I'm sorry, you are where? We are here in the hotel. Which hotel? So this person names the hotel, and it's a hotel in Havana, Cuba. So this official now is completely mystified. Sorry, but we weren't aware of your arrival. Well, we are here. Now please, send the car with the drivers. Send the cars with the drivers. There are 8 of us. So, remember now I said to you, they had just come to the end of a very stressful 2-week period where one delegation after another had been and gone. And here's a new delegation that arrived unannounced. Now, this doesn't only happen in Cuba. It happens in other embassies in other countries as well. To the extent where the host countries have asked us and said, but the delegation that arrived in February came to study our agricultural system. And then the delegation that arrived in March came to do the same thing. And then the municipal delegation that arrived in April also came to study our agricultural system. Don't you people in South Africa talk to one another? So, this is me. I'm confronted with this. I'm expected to give a response. Delegations have gone. They've left. Okay? So the purpose of my visit is to impress upon, and perhaps, Chair, given your particular role with the provinces and with SAGA, and I'm excited in your comments that you intend to meet as a select committee with SAGA, and I hope as the NCOP, and I'm pleading with you to bring this across to SAGA, so that from that angle and that perspective, we can impress upon not just the provinces, but also particularly the large municipalities, because they're the ones with the resources and the funding to undertake these visits. The district councils are seldom in a position to do so. So this is a serious challenge. And so we need to find a way, as you say, Chairperson, of streamlining and coordinating these visits. I think countries in other parts of the world have given up on us. And they've just decided these South Africans are daft. Because quite often, a lot of these things, simply by going to the library or by opening your laptop and accessing the relevant information, you can learn about it. Or if you can ask one individual from a university to come here, whether it's you, the select committee, whether it's one of our portfolio committee, or a relevant municipality, you can learn about that. But all of us, I'm a member of parliament, I was the chair, and once a portfolio committee overruled me, and they said to me, Chairperson, we're going to Germany. And we went. So it's one of the demands MPs make on me. Very early in the sitting, in the, 5 years, when are we going overseas? Are we going overseas? And if you say, why, they say, why not?
because it's expected of you. Now, these are all the things, Chairperson, which we would need to address. So when you meet with Saudi and raise this issue, please bear in mind that we here in the NCOP and the NA are as much to blame as the people at the local government level. So when we demand of the chair of the select committee and or the portfolio committee, we need to bear that in mind. So you need to ask yourself, do we really need to undertake this visit? Inevitably, based on my own experience, the answer is no. You could find a way of learning about what you want to do on the study tour at home and far more effectively. The whole purpose is the overseas visit. And in the process, you overload the Cubans and you overload our mission. Our missions, Chairperson, Honorable Members, they are exhausted with hosting delegates or delegations from South Africa. They really are exhausted. And so that is something that we would need to put our minds together and see how best we can deal with it. So if you can please go some way towards persuading Saga about this problem, we would be most grateful, Chairperson. Now, I must agree with you when you say that public diplomacy requires a consultation with the relevant province when it takes place in that province. So we would need to bring this to the attention of the DDG and ask him or his office to liaise through you, Chairperson, through your good office. We would look at ensuring that happens. Reform, let me deal with the Grand Inga project firstly. we understand the risks. It's called the Grand Inga. I hear you say Great Inga, but it's called the Grand Inga, so more or less the same. We agree with you that this would require a stability in the DRC. And as long as there's instability in the DRC, then our investment in this project is at risk. But I think everyone is mindful of this, and so we are playing a key role in trying to ensure that stability comes about in the DRC through diplomatic means and other means. Now, the Security Council, we are party to what is called the Ethekwini Consensus. I think it's called the Ethekwini Consensus. Ezulwini, my apologies, Ezulwini Consensus. I'm at home, and in fact I should be next door in Swaziland. Ezulwini Consensus. At one point, President Zuma asked us as deputy ministers whether, this was the question he posed, is the Ezulwini consensus still relevant in the current circumstances? I'm going to give you my response to that question, which I haven't given to him yet, because the matter hasn't arisen. In my own personal view, I don't believe it's relevant anymore. I don't believe that the permanent five, any one of them, will want to give up their veto. Because you see, the Ezulwini consensus says democratize it, have more countries from various regions of the world, but let the five keep the veto right. I believe it's flawed. Because you're not, all you're doing is you're adding people to the council, but the problem remains. The problem is not the democratization or adding countries from other regions to the council. The problem in the council is the veto power. And as long as we attach ourselves to one of the permanent five, we find that then we can get away with doing things that are wrong. Because because we know our friend there will veto any resolution brought against us. It's now become even worse if you look at what is happening in Syria and Yemen. Okay? Now, Syria is a proxy war between Saudi Arabia and Iran. That's the reality. That's the reality. Then the other big powers have come in. Russia, the US, Britain. In fact, Britain has proudly announced that in 2016, Britain sold to Saudi Arabia £250 billion worth of armaments.
Billion.
And they've announced their intention to increase that. President Trump was there now and proudly announced a deal worth $110 billion, again, armament sales to Saudi Arabia. And I bet you, Chippers, all those arms were used in both Syria, Yemen, and Iraq. So, to come back to your question then, in all of this, where is the UN Security Council? Well, the members of the P5 have a vested interest in ensuring that the war continues, because then they are able to sell more arms to the protagonist, Saudi Arabia. Iran doesn't buy arms from them because these countries have initiated sanctions against Iran. But the war continues. And as long as the war continues, they sell more armaments to them. So, what is the solution? I don't know. I think we need to ask ourselves a very fundamental question, which is, what gives the Security Council its authority? I'm not going to give you an answer to that, because I believe we need to go away and think about that. Because if we take that authority away, then maybe the permanent five will come running to us and say, okay, please, let's talk. But it's not going to be easy, because once you have power, and the veto is a power, you'll never want to give it up. You'll fight to the death to give it up. And that's where we are at present. That's all I have to say. I will leave the hard question. All right. Let me deal with Hazel, Francis, and Gubeni, and then I'll ask my colleagues to deal with the staff and the laying off and public diplomacy at our schools and Ubuntu Radio and how effective it is. I also don't listen to it. So, Hazel, Francis, and Gubeni. I think this was a disgrace. I said as much to the Portfolio Committee. I believe that the process of vetting her was flawed. I don't believe, as you pointed out, remember, that the relevant reference check with South African AMS was done. I don't think it was done. Because as you quite rightly pointed out, if someone had simply picked up the phone and phoned the CEO of South African Airways, they would have been told, oh no, we fired that person. And so the easier way is to do it is not to phone SAA or contact SAA in writing and ask them to give you an employment reference. And once they omitted to do that, they sent Hazel Francis Ngubeni to Singapore. And here's the kicker. She only received her vetting certificate of clearance 3 months after she took office in Singapore. And all of that tells you that the whole thing was designed to ensure that nobody checked. Well, the Singaporeans checked. And eventually they found out the truth and raised Mary Hell. So you see, if you don't do things properly, but clearly someone is determined to ensure that Hazel Francis Ngubeni occupies a position of this caliber. I believe this matter needs further investigation, myself. I don't believe that we should be embarrassed to the extent that we have in this particular matter. But that's my personal view. I'm not a diplomat. When we leave here, they will all say to me, DM, you should have spoken diplomatically. And I'm always reminding them that I'm a politician. And I look at things from a different prism. Because when you and I go out there, we are forced to face the people of South Africa. And how do you do that diplomatically when they say to you, what about this Hazel Francis and Mbeni person? You can't deal with it diplomatically. You have to be honest about it and call it by its name, which is a disgrace. Those are my few comments in that regard, Chairperson. So I'll leave the LRPs and the laying off of staff, public diplomacy at our schools, which I think is an excellent suggestion, and then Ubuntu Radio.
Thank you very much, DM, Chairperson, members and colleagues. Thank you very much for the opportunity. I happen to have been one of the first presenters of Ubuntu Radio when it was launched in 2013, but I don't suggest that I can vouch and speak with authority that it is indeed effective. Chair, I want to take it for granted that members are aware that Ubuntu Radio was launched in October 2013 by Minister Maite Mbona Mashabane, and it is, of course, a 24-hour radio station, and we believe that it is broadcast in about 45 African countries, and this, Chairperson, excludes missions within which we have a footprint. We have about 125 missions where the listenership is also quite very good. So this 45 is only in Africa. It excludes Latin America and other regions where we have representation. We are also reliably informed that it is the first government radio station, not only in South Africa, in the rest of the African continent as well. And it's also not a frequency modulation radio. You can access it through internet, www.ubunturadio.co.za. And I must say that in the past 2 years since it was launched on the DSTV audio bouquet 888, it has leveraged on that accessibility, because many of us these days have access to DSTV. And sometimes I hear people saying that they had inadvertently listened to Ubuntu Radio because they wanted to switch on 889, which is power radio station. So I think it is also the proximity in terms of the numbers as well has also come to our advantage. And it basically promotes exchange of views and opinions about issues in the public discourse, be it on foreign policy issues or issues that is of interest to academics, students and other role players within society. So, but whether or not we have taken advantage of the current geopolitical developments, making use of the radio station, and the answer to that, Chairperson, is a yes, especially since it was launched on audio bouquet 888. The other beauty about it is that you know that arguably South Africa is the second highest host of diplomatic missions. I think we hover around 144 after Washington, D.C. And we take advantage of this representation to invite heads of mission and other staff members within embassies to come and talk about issues of common interest and mutual benefit. From time to time, they come to our studios, which are in-house in the department, to invite ambassadors on issues that could be of common interest. And from time to time, our staff members, who are also radio DJs, as they are called, visit those respective embassies to engage with them on issues of common interest. They also engage on selected issues. You have, Chairperson, referred to some of the incidences that are happening throughout the globe. You referred to engage in public participation programs. There has been a number of public participation programs that were held sometime in the beginning of this year by the minister, and I can assure you, Chairperson, that some of these were held in primary schools. I'm trying to answer two questions in one. I'm trying to, because there's a link. The public participation programs that are held on annual basis also include primary school kids. During the beginning of this year, the minister has held public participation programs in Limpopo, Winterveld, in Mabubane, as well as in Bloemfontein, Tabanchu to be precise. So a number of students were engaged on issues of foreign policy, but at a level in which they could understand exactly what foreign policy is. A 70-year-old woman in Tabanchu must be able to understand the finer details of what foreign policy is in the simplest and easiest languages that they can identify with. So the answer to the question, Chairperson, is yes, we have leveraged, and indeed Radio Ubuntu Radio is where it is now because of the efforts that have been made. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I'll be very short. The layoff or retrenchment. We are talking about the staff that are not South African. These are the, if we have a mission in Washington, we are talking about the people who are resident in Washington or USA national. So we're not talking about South Africans. We understand the challenges of unemployment, and we're not willing to contribute to that number. So that is a discussion that we are having with National Treasury to say we can't be in a position to contribute to unemployment. We must create an opportunity for people. And one of the issues that we considered was to say, how do we then keep our skills in terms of the people who are already reached towards retirement age, but we want that skills within the diplomatic arena. So we look at to say how do we then encourage the staff that we have to go and apply for position in SADC Secretary. To say we then, instead of having officials or positions at an executive level, we then want to have people who should then be part of the team that generate and follow up on issues that is what the secretary need to monitor. So we are not in any way intending to request that we initiate any retrenchment for South African staff. These are the people that we employ for many years. So we are mindful of that. So that is the part, and we are in conforming with what Treasury wants. So we are in that engagement with
I think it's this language that Derko uses. Because if we look at slide 33, it talks about, no, slide 32. You say of layoff locally. Now for us locally, it's South Africa. And for you in Derko, local means in the country in which the embassy is. Okay, so that helps that you have clarified that. It's the schools?
Yeah. No, Chair, we welcome the school. We have not looked it in that detail, but the minister will always use the example of China. You see, China is good. One message, but different platforms that they convey that. And we think that if we can start at the level of schooling, we should be able to then able to match that. Because recently we then have the youth meeting with China following the 4-cup resolution, which you found that the Chinese, in terms of the youth, they were able to articulate what is the vision of China as opposed to our youth in terms of that information. We think that will be able to enhance our way of communicating the national interest in terms of foreign policy. We welcome that, Chair.
Thanks very much. Honourable members, can we conclude opposition? No, before we do that, it's important that I mention this one. And I purposely left it out so that we can conclude with that. I am sure I'm speaking on behalf of all the other members to say that this budget that you're presenting to us, particularly the shortfall, is of concern. We, as members of the committee, do not have answers. And therefore, when we didn't raise it, it's not because we are worried. We are not happy with the situation in which we find ourselves, which you have aptly explained to us is a combination of international as well as local factors, particularly the currency fluctuations. And we appreciate that you are talking to Treasury on looking at resolutions for that. But also to say that in this phase of our democracy, where we are looking at economic transformation, we recognize that we are living in a globalized world, and we cannot succeed in delivering to our people unless we take our rightful place as well within the foreign space. And therefore, we are perturbed by the fact that now that we are making a breakthrough in the foreign space, we have the handbrake being pulled up by the financial constraints within the department. We want to assure you, not of our prayers, but of our support as you struggle to deal with that. And if there's any way in which we as a select committee can help you, we will be prepared to do it. I don't want to preempt my speech of tourism for this afternoon, but we have the same thing with tourism. And the interesting thing that's happening with tourism is that, as you mentioned here in your presentation, the cooperation that you have with tourism, because then you bring the foreign capital here, and not only looking at getting it out there, but also looking at intergovernmental cooperation so that we can strengthen that. I was at the meeting we had in Pretoria, convened by the Portfolio Committee, where we were looking at the foreign services board, and with DTI reporting to us, and also I raised it with Minister Tlasa to say, but do you have people from the Department of Tourism or from the Department of Trade and Industry that are doing service abroad, and how exactly we can help to make sure that the legislation that we pass will not mitigate against the important work that DIRCO is doing internationally. So we are wishing you well in dealing also with that challenge that presently faces the department. I know that if Honourable Faber was here, he always raises the concern about whether you have enough money in the context of the volatility of the South African trade to be able to do your work. Thank you very much. Can we add that we have some things just to deal with, which are internal matters. If you wish to, you could say thank you, Deputy Minister Sanders, and your team. We aren't guilty that you come to us like once every 3 months, but we are having a happy
Very nice. members, we're going to be brief. I'm going to present to you the apology that I've received after the meeting started. I've received the apology from the Honourable Dihale, where the chair of the NCOB called the meeting of officers, and she needed to be in that meeting and therefore couldn't make it for this meeting. The minutes of our last meeting, as well as the program, because of us not being a quorum, we can't deal with that now. So we will let that stand over to a next meeting. That said,